Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. David Crowley makes a surprising comeback, and the sprint to November is on. Plus, a look at the polls. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for August 14th.
Hi, I'm J.R. Ross.
And I'm Vanessa Kelson.
Vanessa, thanks for filling in a Rewind this week while Anya's out.
Thanks for having me.
Doing this for a long time. I don't remember a primary where three candidates dropped out, one got back in, the polls had a double-digit lead the week before for the person who finished second by 3,800 votes. I doubt you have either. I want to ask you, like, what surprise, did you see this coming at all? Did you see David Crowley, a path for victory for him, what you're seeing the last couple weeks?
I mean, it was absolutely a whirlwind from start to finish this entire primary. I think there was a little bit of a shift that you started to feel in that last week or so, especially as Governor Tony Evers was hitting the campaign trail with David Crowley. You started to see a bit more momentum there in that campaign than you did before. And then on the other hand, you started to see some of these viral moments from Francesca Hong, specifically that clip from CNN with Caitlin Collins talking about Thanksgiving, would she cancel it, would she not? So I think it started to become clear of, okay, maybe this isn't 100% solidified as some pollsters had suggested even, you know, a little bit more than a week before.
What was kind of interesting to me was that even Crowley's campaign on Tuesday was like, yeah, it's going to be tough. There's a path, but it's tough for us. And what's interesting is you look at like where things kind of, how they turned, we have a map here we're going to show you of like each county and the results. Looking across the state of Wisconsin, Hong did better in the more population centers, like your Madison, Green Bay, Oshkosh, even Point, Eau Claire, La Crosse. He won Milwaukee County, which he kind of had to do, being from Milwaukee executive. And his margin in Waukesha County was about 5,400 votes. That's the largest margin statewide. So it seems like he, A, didn't get blown out in Dane County, which he kind of expected. I mean, when I saw Dane County's number, and went, okay, there's a path here, because he's only down by like 7 points, 8 points, turned out to be about seven. That plus him leading Waukesha and being up in Milwaukee, I went, okay, there's something happening here. What were your takeaways from the results on Tuesday?
I think another thing to note was over 8% of the vote went for candidates who had dropped out of the race. And when it was this razor thin of a margin between Crowley and Hong, that definitely had an impact on the results. You also saw 7.5% of the vote for Kelderoys, basically a little bit over 12% of the vote going to Kelderoys and Joel Brennan overall. Kelderoys being, you know, from the Dane County area, that probably had an impact in hurting Francesca Hong in terms of voters for her. So definitely interesting, the domino effect of other candidates in the race hurting or helping the top two.
Well, the domino effect, let's do a timeline real quick. So July 17th, Zorriges drops out. July 18th, Crowley gets back in with Evers' endorsement. July 30th, the Barnes drops out. Kind of August 4th to 5th was roughly the Thanksgiving time in the Francesca Hong campaign, talking about her old tweets on national TV. And in talking to my sources this week, I came to the conclusion there's like almost a perfect storm for Crowley of like what happened. So kudos to Governor Evers for helping Crowley get back in this race. The way it was rolled out was not ideal. I mean, Crowley gets in on a Saturday, Evers is in Africa on a trade mission for 10 days. That was kind of an odd way to do things. It seemed desperate. I talked to people who were involved with the effort who were saying, yeah, this is either brilliant or crazy or a little bit of both. But to your point, like things were shifting. I get the impression that one, Crowley got enough resources in the end to get up on TV. He had about $4 million between him and two groups backing him. That helped a great deal. Francesca Hong didn't communicate to voters on TV. She spent $300,000 on media expenses total, $150,000 on digital ads from what I could track. So you have that stuff going on. Then you have Mandela Barnes dropping out. When you think about a margin of 4,000 votes, every bit helps. If Barnes is on the race, probably hurts David Crowley, you think? Probably, you know,
we're kind of guessing. Right, you never know, 100%, but.
And then Francesca Hong, everybody's told me this week that if she had just like taken a basement approach to this entire campaign the last 10 days, probably the nominee, because when she went on TV and talked about, and it wasn't her bringing up, obviously, but national reporters bringing up like, hey, these tweets about cancellation, what's this all about? They didn't have a great answer at first. At one point, she said, well, it's a tough time for some people. Then she argued it was her favorite holiday. I mean, I had one operative say, look, what she should have said was, I've heard it, holiday's Labor Day, okay, because I'm for workers. I said that a long time ago. I've evolved, or, you know, it was a joke way back then. Let's focus on other things. But she didn't. And the fact they weren't better prepared for these things and, like, more disciplined underscored the challenges her campaign faced of, if she become the nominee, this could have been problematic in the general election, right? Like, she'd been hammered this stuff constantly. So that's some stuff I picked up.
And adding to that perfect storm, too, it's the timing also within the race of, this is the point where a lot of people started to tune into the race for the very first time.
Oh, yeah.
Talking to friends that maybe aren't even so politically inclined, their first sort of note about the whole governor's race was Francesca Hong's Thanksgiving comments. That was their tuning in point.
Yeah. And I had somebody tell me that breaks through, like with people who aren't junkies like us. Like, they don't know the Medicaid for all positions of all the candidates, but they hear about Thanksgiving. I mean, as odd as it is, like, that kind of, like, resonates with people. And so you add all that together, and there's just this narrow window for Crowley to pull it off, and he did. So, again, kudos to Governor Evers for the way he helped Crowley, the campaign they put together. You also can't ignore the Republicans overplayed their hand in the closing days. So remember, we all covered the Republican Governor Association, this ad about how Francesca was, like, dangerously liberal, and she opposed Donald Trump's immigration policies. It's like a wink and a nod, like, yeah, she's bad, but hey, primary voters, we want you to vote for her, right? They switched their traffic July 31st to more of a contrast ad between her and Tiffany about how Tiffany wants to cut taxes, she wants to raise taxes on everything, essentially. And national conservative media became like this feeding frenzy about the Thanksgiving stuff and all the other old quotes and, like, all this other stuff. They want to make her the face of the Democratic Party nationally, it seemed like. And I heard from Republicans that they were getting attention from outstate people saying, hey, we're using her to raise money in other states because it's so breaking through. If they just, like, waited till, like, August 12th, unleash the hounds, maybe a different story. But again, all of it comes together. And so now we have this election coming up in November between Tom Tiffany and David Crowley. And speaking of those two, we've got some video of them from election that we're listening to right now. There's comments about their wins on Tuesday in these primaries.
This isn't a typical election about red versus blue. This is an election about the very soul of the state of Wisconsin. It's about what kind of Wisconsin we're going to leave the next generation. So I ask you tonight to stand with me. Stand with me for our fight for lower taxes and good paying jobs. Stand with me as we demand accountability of our state government. Stand with me as we fight for better schools and safer communities. Stand with me as we protect the Wisconsin way of life. And stand with me as we move Wisconsin forward.
This election is not about insiders versus outsiders. It's not about the establishment versus progressives. It's about building something bigger than any one campaign. It's about building a movement, y'all. Together, we will build the broad coalition that this moment absolutely demands. Together, we will reject division. Together, we will reject extremism. Together, we will make history and write the next chapter of Wisconsin's story. One built on opportunity, compassion, hard work, and hope.
So now, Vanessa, every campaign I cover, a primary, post-primary, it's about the unity events, right? So we had events, tours with the Democrats and Republicans. So you caught, I think, both Tom Tiffany and DeForest and the Democratic Union Breakfast in Middleton. What did they tell you, or what did you hear when you were at those events this week?
Yeah, so the Democratic Unity Breakfast in Middleton was definitely all about coalescing around David Crowley. At that Unity Breakfast, you had Francesca Hong there breaking bread with Crowley, as well as key figures in the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, like U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, Representative Mark Pocan. After that breakfast, Crowley came out, addressed the press, and really just talked about moving forward from this altogether, mm-hmm. said that he's ready to pitch a tent big enough to be able to bring Hong supporters in to help out in the general election. But really, the main goal should be defeating the Republican nominee Tom Tiffany in November. And that's enough of a goal to be able to bring all of the Democrats together, even those that voted for Hong in the primary instead.
I think at the Republican event, you caught a great picture I saw on social media of a pamphlet in Tiffany's back pocket. Can you tell about everybody about that?
Yeah, so in DeForest, the same day, Tom Tiffany also spoke to supporters there, and tucked into his jeans, noticed that there was a pamphlet that said Tom Tiffany is a MAGA extremist. appears to be some sort of Oppo research. I'm not sure exactly how it ended up there, but was walking around with it on his back.
What did Tiffany talk about on Tuesday, or Wednesday?
Tiffany, I asked him specifically with this sort of upset that happened on Tuesday, now that Crowley's the Dem nominee, how does that change his strategy in the race? And Tiffany said that there's, quote, not a dime's difference between any of the Democratic candidates. He said it's the same race to him, and that he also really likened David Crowley to Francesca Hong. Said their policies were very, very similar. That's what they're really going to point to between now and November. Interestingly enough, I also caught up with Brian Schimming, the chair of the Republican Party at this event, asked him the same question. He said it's a new race now that Crowley has won over Hong, but that they're excited to draw the contrast between Tom Tiffany and Crowley.
I get the impression that the Tiffany campaign was all geared up to go after Hong on day one, essentially, like release ads and go after her full bore. They had to recalibrate a little bit, it seemed like. Now, looking ahead to November, a couple things to note. So the Democratic Governor Association is already up to the $1.4 million buy, going after Tom Tiffany and his MAGA agenda, call him extreme. Tiffany's launched a seven-figure buy calling Crowley a failed executive, quote-unquote. And this is a preview, I think, of what we're going to see for the next 2 months. My question to you is, what's going to define this race between Tom Tiffany and David Crowley, and how will Crowley win over the 60% of primary voters who didn't vote for him on Tuesday?
Well, I think first, as you were talking about that recalibration, the very first thing that Tom Tiffany said at that campaign launch, basically, for the general election was a comment about Thanksgiving. He said, okay, Thanksgiving is not going to be canceled this year, which I think is evidence that everyone thought the race was going to go in Hong's favor. But now that it's not, and Crowley set up, I think one of the key things that's going to define the race for Democrats is a referendum on the White House and the Trump administration. Can you come together? Can they liken Tom Tiffany enough to President Donald Trump that Democrats are going to be encouraged and motivated enough to come out in November to keep Tiffany out of the governor's office? I think in terms of actual issues, affordability is going to continue to be a top topic, but I'm also seeing a lot of buzz online around data centers mm-hmm. and where Tom Tiffany versus David Crowley differ on that issue. In the Democratic primary, Francesca Hong was the only candidate who called for a moratorium on all new construction of AI data centers. David Crowley says he still stands by not calling for a blanket moratorium. He says the issue is a little bit more nuanced than that. But already you're seeing Tom Tiffany come out against David Crowley for being too soft on data centers. And it's a big motivating issue for a lot of Wisconsin voters, according to the polling. So it'll be curious to see how it evolves.
I think we've seen already a tweet from Tiffany's campaign calling him Data Center David. There isn't much room between the two of them on data centers. They both want guardrails. They're both opposed to moratorium. Tiffany has talked about repealing incentives for them, and they try to make a contrast to that, but there's also some votes that Tiffany has taken in Congress. But basically, my impression is from my calls is that Tiffany wants to discourage Hong voters from saying, I can get on board the David train. If you can cast doubt in their minds and keep them at home, that helps a great deal. Looking at the November election in general, when Hong looked like she was going to be the nominee, Republicans were salivating about the idea of, hey, we can make this campaign about Francesca Hong and Thanksgiving and socialism / communism rather than about Donald Trump and the economy. Democrats are going, hey, now that it's Crowley's nominee, we're back to being about the economy and Trump more than anything else. For Tiffany, the more he can make it about those other things, about Crowley, about Milwaukee County and its deficit, about Milwaukee County and the health insurance plan that lapsed for a little bit, the administration at least, anything about data, anything you can do to make it more about David Crowley, not about Donald Trump, good for him. Now, we've got an event we did this week at West Politics, a virtual event with Tanya Bjork and Keith Gilks, who are both longtime operatives. Marquette Law School, pull the record, Charles Frank is also there. They talk about it in November. Let's hear Tanya and Keith talk about this fall in the governor's race.
I do think that part of a big motivating factor here is who Tom Tiffany is. People, Democrats are scared of him in terms of what Wisconsin would be like if he ended up being our governor. So that is a very big motivator for Democrats, is to try to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to keep this seat in Democratic hands.
With governor, what they want to know is they like you, they understand you, they feel like they can have a beer with you. And I think that's an entirely different job interview than if you're running for Congress or U.S. Senate. And my, view of it is that, the Tiffany campaign has done a great job of showing who Tom is as a person, making him relatable. So I expect that they're working feverishly to get out there, be available, build coalitions, and get that winning margin.
All right, Vanessa, so I'm going to go rapid fire here because there were so many races we were following on Tuesday. Other constitutional offices on the Republican side, David Varnum beats Will Martin for the GOP nomination to be lieutenant governor. I'll run with Tom Tiffany as a ticket. Sarah Galluski, the Secretary of State and former state treasurer, is now the nominee for lieutenant governor, running with David Carlisle. She's unopposed. Secretary of State Jay Schroeder won that race for Republicans. And for Democrats, I'm sorry if I said this incorrectly, but Yi Li Zong is now the nominee for Democrats for state treasurer, taking on John Leiber, the incumbent. Now we have a bunch of primaries involved incumbents, and again, trying to get through as much as I can. So in the 8th, Ishmael Luna beat Sylvia Ortiz-Velez. Really an interesting race because Sylvia broke with the caucus a year ago. Her colleagues threatened her of accused her of threatening to shoot some of them. Right. Then she had this break about Hispanic Heritage Month and Hispanic Heritage a resolution honoring Hispanic veterans, and so they broke. She lost basically 3-1 to Ishmael Luna. Now, she was unhappy about the primary. She recruited some attorneys, Priscilla Prado. Prado won basically about 70% of the vote over Mimi Riza, a member of the Milwaukee School Board. In the 12th, Russell Goodwin was targeted because he voted for a GOP-authored bill to ban transgender athletes from playing in sports as for girls and women. Wins despite being targeted by outside money. The 19th Assembly District, Ryan Clancy, targeted 2 years ago over his comments about Palestine and Israel. Wins again this time, much more low-key race than 2 years ago. On the GOP side, we had a couple incumbents challenged as well. First, Mark Bourne, the co-chair of the Finance Committee. He beat this guy by 40 points 2 years ago. Wins by like 30-some this time. Data centers a huge issue in that race. It was a big one in Beaver Dam. Also up north, Chance Green, Republican from Mason. Also a rematch, Scott Harbridge. He wins that one with 65%. Now there are also some primaries, so take a breath, and swing seats that are going to be important this fall. So first, the 17th Senate District, Jenna Jacobson, state rep from Oregon. She will now run against Howard Markline, who is the co-chair of the Finance Committee. That is one of four seats we think in the Senate will determine control of that chamber. Over on the Assembly side, Oak Creek Mayor Daniel Bakayevich beat a guy who's backed by kind of the Socialist Caucus in 21st. Swing seat, represented by Jesse Rodriguez, Republican who is retiring. Probably the most vulnerable seat they have for Republicans on the numbers alone. Dems really happy about the mayor getting through. Oak Creek Mayor Electrician, union guy, kind of fits the district quite well. Running is Dylan Pfaffenbach, who is a college student and a former legislative aide. Over in the 26th, we have one of the few Democrats you have to worry about this fall, because there aren't any swing seats for Democrats. Joe Sheehan, he's going to face John Bellinger, a former Sheboygan alderman. He won that three-way primary quite handily. Was the only person actually active in those primaries. And finally, in the 61st, Ben Brist, an Army vet, won a three-way race for that district to face Bob Donovan, probably from Greenfield. Worth noting, the 61st, we mentioned the GOP meddling in the governor's race. Here, the Jobs First Political Fund would spend about $21,000 or $25,000 on mail and phones in that race, trying to elevate another candidate over Ben. Interesting that it didn't work and that Ben's now getting through. So those are our primaries in the legislature we watched on Tuesday. Now, more numbers, but more of a conversation here. The polling miss.
Yeah.
So I'm a dork about polling. Completely embrace that dork label. I have never seen a miss like this other than in 2020, which everybody was off with that one, right? But a miss like this at the state level was kind of unusual. And I just want to read a couple of polls here. So State Navigate, they had a week ago, Hong 44, Crowley 22, Roy's 11, Brennan 6. That was done August 3rd through 6th. Now Marquette, they were in the field July 22nd to 27th, Barnes on the race. They had Hong 38, Barnes 16, Crowley 7, Brennan 2, Royce 2. So give Marquette some leeway here because a lot happened after that last poll. And Charles Franklin, the director, talked about it in a post this week or a memo this week talking about older voters are most likely to be really supportive of Hong and most undecided in the poll. They moved toward Crowley. The Evers endorsement helped move people, and turnout was higher than expected. So it was about 792,000 votes in the Democratic primary. Compared that to 640 in 2022 for U.S. Senate and 539 in the 2018 primary for governor. So what did you see in this poll that stood out to you with the miss?
I think another notable miss from the Marquette Law School poll, again, it was when Mandela Barnes was still in the race, but they had him in second place. And of course, there are, I'm sure, some voters on Election Day that didn't vote for Barnes because they knew he dropped out. But also, by the time he had dropped out, you had more than 100,000 absentee mail-in ballots cast. We don't know who those ballots were cast for, but considering that they had him in second place, and then in the end result there, he ended up performing pretty poorly compared to the rest of the Democratic primary. I think just another interesting miss on that. But I do agree with you. I think that the significant amount of undecided voters, I'm sure, played a pretty significant factor of how Crowley ended up going in the end. As you saw with the Marquette Law School poll, they were only off by about 1% in how Francesca Hong performed. So it was really the big question mark where the miss was how David Crowley performed. And I think you can deduce that perhaps it's all those undecided voters ended up going to Crowley, perhaps in that shift we were talking about earlier of that last week of the perfect storm.
Yeah, you know, look, being a polling dork, I've talked to plenty of operatives who don't like the Marquette poll at times because they think it's overemphasized, and we're guilty of that. You know, we cover that thing start to finish. Hasn't a great track record in spring races and primaries. Put that aside, it's great in October. St. Navigate, kind of a new person on the block. I just want to point out one thing. So before 2005, before the Help America Vote Act, if you were a community of more than 5,000 people, you didn't have to register your voters. Like, they just kind of came in and said, hey, I'm Joe Blow, and you voted. Voters in those communities were kind of imported to the statewide list, and they were given a placeholder of a date for birth date, 1900, something like January 1st, 1900. I know it's kind of odd, but anyway. Those voters are still on the list today because they're active. They vote every 4 years at least. That means they're still on the list. They're not taken off. State Navigate said in its polling memo that, like, half the voters of that birth date, so they're 18 to 29 years old. That's not possible. So I'm pointing this out to show you that you have to watch how these pollsters operate. Wisconsin's hard to poll. Wisconsin primaries are really, really hard to poll. When you make mistakes like that, that inflates your youth vote and causes you problems with the polling. So we've had so much going on. We have to jump right ahead to the stock report this week. So first, we're going to talk about Rising. Michael Alfonso and Rebecca Cook, both in the primaries for the 7th and 3rd CDs. Just Alfonso real quick. Look, if his follow-on weren't Sean Duffy, nobody paid attention to this guy. I mean, I'm not trying to be offensive to him. He's 26 years old. That is not, when I was 26, I was not going to get elected to Congress.
You were running for Congress?
No. No, too many skeletons. But nonetheless, the Duffy machine really helped between the resources and everything else. There was this weird kind of moment a week or two ago where all this money came in late. Hmm. And people wondered, was this race actually close? It really wasn't in the end. Fonzo was by more than 20 points, so he's on his way to becoming a congressman. Rebecca Cook, more interesting race for November because about Derek Van Orden. Mm-hmm. There are activists unhappy about the DCCC endorsing Cook. So I was watching the margin of this one. She won 60 to 40 roughly. It avoids that embarrassing headline of she eked out a win when she had like 10 times more money than Emily Berg. Now the question is, how does David Crowley's nominee, not Francesca Hong, impact this race? Is there a connection between the governor's race and congressional race? What's the environment going to be like come November? Derek Van Orden is the only member of Congress, Republican member of Congress, who underperformed Trump 2 years ago. Trump's on the ballot anymore. Or Trump supporters be motivated to turn out? We shall see. So something to watch there. Next, we have Sean Duffy. I mentioned the help he gave his son-in-law. He did it in an odd way. So I mentioned Chance Green earlier in the show and how he won that primary. Chance went on a podcast a week or two ago and said he liked Kevin Hermanning. Not that he was supporting him, endorsing him, just like he thought Kevin was a better candidate. He's a financial advisor. He was a Marine, a 20-year-old Marine in 1979. He was taken hostage at the embassy in Iran, I believe. Spent 400-some days in captivity. had that kind of resume, and Chan's like, hey, I like this resume. Michael Alfonso, 26 years old, former podcaster. Okay, not the same resume than Chan's. Didn't say I'm going to go campaign for anything. Sean taped a video that was posted on Facebook on Sunday next to Scott Harbridge, the Chan's Green opponent, and saying this guy's America first, Wisconsin first, at least what we need in Madison. It raised eyebrows around this town of like, what is going on? This guy's a transportation secretary of the United States. He's weighing on a primary for the assembly against the guy that we have in our caucus. This is a problem. So it just underscored the people who have talked about Duffy that this race, yes, he helped us out a great deal. He also was at times a little bit kind of like, I'm keeping track if you cross me kind of thing. Not a great look for a sitting member of a cabinet to be doing this in a primary. And finally, following GOP endorsements. So state party convention, I can't remember, were you at the convention in May this year?
I wasn't, but following
you,
it.
You missed a hoot of a time. Nonetheless, every 2 years when they have a statewide race, they have this endorsement process, right? And so two endorsed candidates, Will Martin and Nate Paulno, lost their primaries for Lieutenant Governor and Secretary of State, respectively. So the question is, what's the value of the endorsement state party if you can't win or don't win with it? Now, Tom Tiffey was endorsed, had token opposition in the primary there. Eric Tony is endorsed for AG, unopposed. John Leiber, unopposed. A race where you got like two people running, what's going on here? Well, in making my calls, the feedback I got was that, yes, endorsements are good. You have to do something with it. Nobody had the money to really kind of like promote this to voters. The more interesting thing, though, is if you go back and look, since 2014, I think like 15 of 20 cases of like down ballot statewide races, not governor, the person listed first has won the primary. Now, in Wisconsin, what we do basically is Elections Commission randomly draws out names. That's what you put on the ballot, and it's sent across the entire state. So after this experience where, yet again, endorsed candidates lost their primaries, I've got people telling me, hey, maybe we should stop doing this and have like a random draw for every precinct is to mix it up a little bit. Nonetheless, worth noting that the primary endorsement from the GOP only helps if you have money to put behind it. And that wraps up a busy week at Rewind. I am J.R. Ross.
I'm Vanessa Kelson.
Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.